Accession number 8834, rule number 2.
Mr. Northcote, tape 2. Could I now ask you about your postings once you had joined up in 1914? Whereabouts was your first camp?
Garstang, between Preston and Lancaster, where they had a rather nasty accident with water. Something connected with water. Several people killed about 12 months, 18 months ago.
Oh, yes. Yes, remember? I remember.
Yeah.
Yes. What did you actually do there, Mr. Northcote? What was your training?
Marching, training, field training. Oh, marching all over the place. It's on the slopes, the bottom slopes of the Pennine Range. Pendle Hills near there, where the Lancashire Witches. That's another Alison Hainsworth book, Lancashire Witches.
Did you have any medical examination at this time?
Oh, your medical exam before you... and then before we went to Egypt. I was actually... I always seemed to get landed with the jobs, which I liked doing anyway. And we went to Littleborough from Stretford Road, on the canvas there, on the service conditions. That's 22 men to a tent, to a bell tent, no bedding or anything like that. And we'd only been there a couple of days when I was told I'd got to go to billet the battalion at Wellingborough. And they took one private from each company, that's eight privates, a corporal, a sergeant and a lieutenant. And we went by train to Wellingborough in Northamptonshire. And we were hanging about there. The police were doing all the work of getting the houses, you know, because they knew the district. And we were to fill in the forms. And the very morning, the Friday morning that we were to fill in the papers, nurse came through, back to Manchester, not billeting. On the Sunday evening, we got on the train and went straight down to Southampton.
Before I ask you about your journey to Egypt, is there anything you can remember about this very short period, after all, when war broke out until you sailed for Egypt in August 1914, that is noteworthy?
Yes, we were all at headquarters, and only about a week or a few days longer after the war started. And we were all dished out with the full complement of ammunition, and wondered what was going on, wondered why, what weapon. It turned out afterwards that two German cruisers had sailed down the east coast, fired shells at Whitby, at the Abbey, hit the Abbey, and several shells on Scarborough, hitting the Grand Hotel, right in the middle, I believe. One or two people killed there, I believe. And the powers that be thought it was the start of an invasion. So that's why we stood to with the ammunition. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, we're told, right, oh, check your ammunition. We brought a blanket round, threw our ammunition into the blanket. That was that.
Were you sent off anywhere?
No.
A scared eye done.
It was just this false alarm, really.
When you think of this period of training, I suppose, as you were going on to Egypt, was the intention to continue your training there? Was that the idea, Because after all, you'd had very little in England.
Really getting down to real training.
In Egypt.
You can't do much training in a fortnight and drill nights and sort of things like that. That's real training there, across the desert miles.
Yes,
and miles.
I must ask you about that now, Mr. Northcote. So, could I now ask you about your journey to Egypt?
Yes.
You say you went to Southampton first of all, is that right?
Yes, Southampton. And the Wigan Battalion, the 5th, were on the same ship. We were on a ship called the Corsican. An Allen line ship, like they're gone now, there's no such line there. And we set sail that evening, and midday probably, and through the Bear Biscay is terribly rough, everybody sees it, and pitched up in Gibraltar early in the morning, the following morning, about 2 mornings later. And we'd been going very, very slowly with an escort on account of there being an ammunition ship, a small ship full of ammunition, which we were taking to in the escort to Gibraltar. She was about 2 or 3 miles ahead in case she was mined or torpedoed and blew up, so it wouldn't damage the other ship. And we spent the whole day at Gib, of course all on board, buying cigars and grapes and goodness knows what from the bumboat men alongside.
Who are the bumboat men?
They come out, either Maltese, Gibraltans or Spaniards, in open rowing boats, and they've got everything under the sun there. Grapes, oranges, figs, you name it. Cigars, 50 cigars, I got small cigars for 2 and 6 months. Cigarettes, all sorts of stuff. And Summers and several of the boys, one for each boat, had a basket with a string on, and they loaded into the boat. They say, what you wanted, what do you want, what do you want? And you put your money in, how much it was, put it in the basket and load it, and up came the goods.
Was all that rather exciting for a young man, going abroad for the first time?
Oh, marvellous, yeah. Wonderful.
You liked the idea of going abroad, did you?
Oh, yes, the first time I'd ever been out of the country. Then we, I don't know whether you want to carry on from there, we set sail that evening, and we must have been somewhere off Libya, between Malta and Libya, and we met the 29th Division, that's one of the crack divisions of the English regiments, coming home from India, I believe, and we were stationed, there must have been over 30 vessels there. Never saw anything like it. Not anchored, just riding there. And two cruisers. The 29th Division had the cruiser Weymouth, that was a first class cruiser with 4 funnels. Our cruiser was a second class cruiser called the Minerva, HMS Minerva. Minerva, a pinnace, everything was coal burning then, all the ships and the pinnaces. A pinnace went from one ship to the other with orders, and then they started off again. The Weymouth took us to Alexandria, and the Minerva took the 29th Division back to England. And the 29th Division, after they were equipped, made the landing on Gallipoli. First Lancashire Fusiliers, or First Dublins, First Inniskillings, Borders, King's Own Scottish Borderers. Oh, I forget the other regiments now.
Did they have a reputation before Gallipoli, do you think, the 29th? Did they have a good reputation?
Oh, a very fine division. Very fine division. Can't have had anything in fighting unless it was in the Boer War. I don't know whether they even called that in those days. It was all rearranging everything. But they were a very fine division. All first battalions of the line.
Your journey to Alexandria, when you look back, was it comfortable? You know, did you enjoy the journey?
Well, yes, you were in hammocks, of course. You slung your hammocks at... you could draw your hammocks at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you had to stow them by about 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning.
And where
lash
did you
them up and
them?
Stow them. They were kept in a rack at the end on the deck. We were one deck down.
Yeah, and you were all together, were you? Was it very crowded?
Well, pretty jammed, yes. Especially sanitary arrangements, of course, were all makeshift. Everything had been ripped out, you see, all the cabins. She was a passenger cargo ship, the Corsican. And very fine dining saloon and all the rest of it. The officers were dining there. And rank and file get skilly.
Yes, I suppose they were in quite a different part from you most of the time,
oh,
were they,
God,
the officers?
Yes, cabins. Even the sergeants were in cabin.
Did you mind that? You know, this
oh,
great
gosh,
difference,
no.
Or was it just
no,
accepted?
It was really a picnic, really. We loved it.
Oh, how did you amuse yourselves, you know, on the...
Nothing. Well, there's so much to watch. You get out on the deck in the beautiful sunshine. Going through the med. Something you'd pay hundreds of pounds for.
Did you have a swimming pool on board?
Oh, gosh, no. No. Very little sanitary arrangements at all.
How about going to the lavatory? What was that like?
Pretty awful.
So did people go over the side of the ship, did you find?
No.
No, it was all confined on the bed.
No, they had two planks fastened together like that, running down the side of the ship with the constant running seawater. And you just sat on a pole and that was that, or stood up, or whatever.
So it would all be very public?
Oh, nothing proud about it.
How did you take to that, you know, as a young boy?
Oh,
did you
just
mind?
Had to. I mean, that was where a little bit of camp training came in useful, because we'd been used to that. I mean, it was all dry bins, you know, in the ordinary camps with canvas round.
How about your food? What sort of food did you have on board?
Wasn't too bad. We, if you were an orderly, section had a table. They built out from the side of the ship with two forms, just ordinary forms, with a corporal at the end, and 12 men. You see, that's a section. And if you were the orderly, there were two orderlies daily, so your turn came about every 6 days. And you took your Dixie, you know, it's a Dixie, a big can with a handle on, and you had to walk. You went aft down the port side, I think it was, yes, port side, through the galley at the end, got your rations, whatever, both of you, see. Out another doorway and back along the port side or starboard side, whatever it was. And we had a wooden, it had been built in specially. We were down what would be the hole, I suppose, in a way, part of it. And they've got a wooden staircase. Go down that. You got porridge in the morning. And Sometimes a bit of bacon, bread, sort of skillet for lunch, and then tea, bread and butter and jam.
What is the skinny?
Oh, anything thrown into the beef, cut up, anything like that. And onions, anything, just thrown into the, and stewed up. Any vegetable.
Was there any danger, or did you feel in danger from submarines or surface
jet? No, the submarines had not started. Hadn't started then, really.
Did you have any lifeboat drill?
Yes. Lifeboats were and Donja lifeboats. It was all corked at fore and aft, you know. Covered in cork, canvas covered in cork, and just tie them around the middle. So three or four drills, I suppose, like that. And allotted to the different boats, of course, so many to a boat.
Had you been given any special kit because you were going out to a country like Egypt?
Any
special kit? Were you given helmets to protect?
No, not until we got there. We were just in the khaki serge, you know, the ordinary khaki serge. And then when we got to Alexandria, I'd done two picket duties. You used to have picket duty at night when everybody was asleep, just to watch that everything was all right, any fire, anything of that sort. And then the morning we got there, I was down in the hold unloading the ship with a lot of others. Went down the little ladder thing down about 30 feet and putting the stuff, all the gear, all our own gear, a lot of rats running about, put all our own gear into nets and hoisted up by the derrick and over the side of the ship.
What sort of gear was that, Mr. Northcote? Can you remember
what sort of
stuff you were loading?
All to do with battalion. Battalion furniture and stuff like that, all sorts of stuff. I don't know.
Did you have any animals on board?
No. No, they went on a separate ship. We'd know there was no motor vehicles of any description in those days. Nothing. And our transport, our own battalion transport, consisted of two or three like trucks. Traps, the Manchester Evening News, Manchester Evening Chronicle, where they used to deliver the papers. Beautifully kept, beautiful horses, very fast. And there used to be competition between the two papers. Manchester Evening News was a liberal paper. The Evening Chronicle, the Holton Press, was conservative, Tory. And they used to race each other to the various little news agents and throw them out, you know, the bundles of papers, onto the pen.
And they were taken over with you?
We took, they were all here, not. Not on our ship. They were on a separate ship. And we had a transport company, you know, that looked after the horses. And we had a few horses for carrying ammunition, horses. They weren't mules, they were pack horses. And we had an ambulance, which was the local bread van. I remember as a boy, a little boy, with a picture of a cottage like this.
A thatched cottage.
With the most beautiful garden in front of it. Thatched cottage. And it's called Cottage Bakery.
Was that painted over?
What they did, they painted it over with grey paint and put a white, big round white disc and a red cross in the middle of it. And in the bright sunlight, when we got to Egypt, you could see the flowers underneath the grey paint. We used to grow a laugh about it.
That must have been quite a nice reminder of home, though, was it?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that. Didn't think about it.
Could you tell me now, arriving at Alexandria, What was your first impressions of the place? You know, was it very bustling?
No, I was there again. Freddie Hame, our company, our colour sergeant, in front of the troops, as Northcote, Private Northcote. On the side, I was Tommy. He said, Tommy, you've had a couple of nights picket duty and you've been down the hole. I've got a little special job for you. There's little garries, two-seater garries, all round in Egypt with a horse and, of course, an Arab driver. And I was the guard with a loaded rifle for the company, the orderly room clerk, with all the money in the box in this garry. And I went up about 4 or 5 miles to the where we were going, to Mustafa, and I got a ride up there. The other poor beggars had to go and march up there, and after being on ship for, it was quite a march with all your equipment on, and we were dished out with sun helmets, but nothing on them, no puggri or anything like that. It was all done later on. You know what the puggri is, do you? You know, there's like a band that's a puggri, and they had those too, for the sun at any rate. And there was an Indian tailor there, or an Arab tailor, and he did all the puggri. It was beautifully done. It was a specialised job. Folding
it
them.
It has to be pleated, has
yeah,
it?
Yeah, pleated, yeah. Beautifully done. And later we got a regimental badge on the side, sewn on the side, on the puggri.
Did they serve their purpose, those hats? Did they really protect you from
good.
The sun?
Oh, yeah, very good.
Did you have cases of sunstroke ever?
Yes, there were several people. If you weren't very careful, you had to watch it. Especially in, not so much in Alexandria as Cairo. Of course, that's where the majority of the training. We used to march 10, 15 miles across the desert and then have some sort of a sham fight and back again. Jolly tough training.
Yes, let me ask you now about your training there. Your first camp, was at Mustafa, is that right? When you went the first
Mustafa.
Time?
Mustafa.
Yes. Yes.
That was a little place with a little tram stop. The electric trams, two linked together like the continental trams, first and second class. And the place was called Sidi Bish, Sidibish, I think it was. That was the tram stop, Sidi Bish. And I forget how much we used to pay to go in. Didn't go in very often, enough money.
What sort of camp was it, though? How did you live? Were you
half of it, there were two blocks of barracks. But they would only hold just over 200 men each. And when we were first there, were 8 companies, and two companies each of the barracks, and the other 4 companies were out in on the canvas. We were on the canvas, our company were on the canvas. Very nice, beautiful tents. It was half the size of this room, long. 6 on each side with a doorway in the middle and a doorway at each end with a canopy. You could close it up or open it out. Very fine. Two big poles strapped round each end with clips on to hold your rifles, but no nothing else. I mean, you put string up and strung your uniforms and stuff. Of course, we were dished out then. We had the khaki drill with our khaki serge and our khaki drill, of course, with long trousers and short trousers.
How about pests? Did you, have any trouble with scorpions?
The flies, terrible. Dreadful. They're all over Egypt. Dreadful fly. The children, they see, well, you see pictures on this famine there. Eyes covered in flies all around their mouth.
It was like that, was it?
Well, we didn't allow them to do that with us, of course, and bash them off. And the only other thing was that, not terribly often, but probably once a week, we'd be putting down our bedding, had to be folded, two blankets, no bedding, weren't allowed bedding because there were sandbugs there. And they'll get into bedding like straw mass, straw pellets. So with just the two blankets, a ground sheet, you put your ground sheet down, and all folded in the daytime, properly neat, two blankets, no pillow. You used your greatcoat, folded up, with a shirt over it as a pillow. And fellows would be bedding down at night, all the scorpion, and big shout like that, all running out with entrenching tool handle to bash a scorpion. Yeah, they were quite nasty. If they did bite you, you could be quite ill. In fact, one regular army man had died before we got, something wrong, he wasn't well physically. And he got bitten in the chest and he died from it. And you've seen pictures of them. They're like almost like a lobster. And the tail comes up over the back. And that's got like a fork, a prong. He bungs that into you. He holds on to you and bungs the fork into you.
How about water there? Did you have plenty of water?
Water's very good. Very good. Both in Cairo and Alexandria.
And what sort of training did you do at Mustapha? Apart from
training in Mustapha was very limited because it's not much in the word desert there. You see, you had to go a long way to get out on the desert from where we were. So it was mainly confined to arms drill, rifle drill, and marching and forming. Fours and all that sort of stuff.
How long would you have been there before you moved off to another place?
We got the dates were in there about the end of the first week in September 14, and we stayed there till about the middle of January, Christmas in Alexandria. I had my 30th birthday and my 21st birthday there at Mex, where we found the Army Course, where we saw the Australians and New Zealanders come in, the Anzacs. That was early in November.
What was that like, seeing the Anzacs come in?
It was late in November. Oh, marvellous. I believe the two divisions, about 29,000 troops in all. Anything between 20 and 30 vessels in the convoy. Marvellous sight. And they had to come in opposite us. We were 10 miles west of Alexandria, on where the range was, a place called Mex. And they came in facing our camp and then veered away to Alexandria. Alexandria was to do with the channel, of course.
Well, what was so impressive about the Anzacs coming in? You said it was a lovely sight.
Well, to know, see, we didn't know who they were to start with, and it came out. But to think of 29 of your fellow, well, not your fellow countrymen, but your fellow Europeans coming out.
Were they fine specimens of men?
Oh, yes. Oh, very fine. But the... I'm afraid the Australians were a little bit roughneck. But I got to know quite a few of them.
How did this manifest itself, this roughneck behaviour?
Well, we got a shilling a day. I had proficiency money. And I'd won my cross guns, and I got threatens for proficiency. I'd been in 4 years, and threatens for, so it wasn't too bad, it was 1 and 6 months. The Australian, the news, the Anzacs got 6 units a day. And of course, they were cheated right, left, and centre by the Arabs, paid them whatever they asked. We made them bargain like billy oil, and they loved it. They liked bargaining. And then when they found they'd been done, they started taking the mickey out of them, you know. Excuse the phrase. And they're a bit rough that way. But fine, I'm not criticising. They're fine body men. But
do you think it caused problems, though, the fact that they had so much more money than the British?
Did cause problems. No doubt about that, because all the prices went up.
Well, did it cause sort of jealousy?
Didn't matter. No, not really. Fair play to them. If they got that, that's fair play to them. But in any case, I was almost teetotal in those days. I think I had 1 pint of beer at Alexandria and 1 just to see what the place was like, the awful looking.